realize conscious ability to materialize your thoughts at will. There was, after Jesus passed away and when they were founding the church, there was a man and his wife, a very wealthy man, who was going to share in communal living, give a portion of his wealth towards building the community. And Peter, knowing the very wealthy man, was amazed at the money he put in the plate. And he looked at him and condemned him for it. And the shock killed the man, because he was rebuked for his act, which he knew he was exposed. And when the man fell over dead, Peter realized he had committed an act of pride, because the karma came down, or the power came down and knocked the man down. Then the same thing occurred with the wife. She had taken a portion of the money and reinvested it somewhere else. And she came back and she heard the news, and she was confronted with Peter, and she fell down and died. So he too made the one mistake that Jesus was liable to make, which is the last test of pride with the ego. You see, there is no devil. We say he went up to be tempted in the wilderness 40 days and 40 nights fasting. He was hammering out different aspects of ego and the various negative natures in it. The last one is, if you bow down and worship me, all these things are yours. In other words, I give you power over life and death if you only become a dictator over humanity. See? And the scriptures say that man has the power to have dominion over the universe, but not to possess it. Only God possesses us, and he is hungry, very hungry for us. It's a funny thing, he created us and he's hungry for us. So hungry for our love. Nothing else does he want from us, because what else would he want from his creation? He cannot ask us for anything else but conscious love from our own efforts. That's why he created us and left us incomplete by the process of evolution, physiologically speaking, and psychologically endowed us with his cosmic nature to move independently from here to here, which is called cosmic man. As Jesus says, man ought to be perfect, but he is not. That does not mean physiologically speaking. Psychologically speaking, he's imperfect. Because imperfect. He has to work out his psychological nature to attain cosmic consciousness, perfecting his consciousness. And there is the danger of our consciousness. Now, understanding the one basic science, masters from every nation, every group, or every school of thought have all taught the fundamentals of living and the fundamentals of building a psychological temple. But we don't practice it, because the physiological evolution of the world keeps us entrapped. And our attitudes change every second. One moment you're angry with your brother, and the telephone rings, and the phone is your friend. Hi! You change from anger to love. And as you listen very bored and disconcerted, hang up you can go and drop it in the lake. And you run to the next person, and you hit that one, and then you get out and you go in the car. But we are doing that all the time. Don't we do it? I'm guilty of it, you guilty. Who is without sin, let them cast the first stone? So we are all guilty. We can't throw a stone at nobody. We are all in the same psychological ferment. We have to realize why we have to build this in a life, and where to build it, and how to build it. Not in the monasteries, because they have their period of time, and they have served their time. And in the home today, we can do it. We must go back to the various information left to us by these ages. That is, environment, in order to acquire the attitude. So if we look at the church is an environment. you go there with respect to the church. 9 times out of 10, we don't go there with respect because God is being spoken in that building. You see, if we went there with the fact that God is being spoken in that building, or that we go there to have some contact with God consciousness, this would be a different attitude to the church even. I guess the priest would be pretty shook up when he see people coming with a reverent attitude, and they sit down and they don't want to hear all that talk. They just want to hear good organ music and really have silent communion with the Spirit. He might get pretty shook up. He may take off into some other realm, scared of his own congregation. For the first time, we have devotees of God. But we create this environment for ourselves with love. And it's in the heart, aching for completion. We are all aching for completion, but completion of what? Is it the completion of knowledge in total? Or is it the peace that passes all understanding, that allows us to have the ability to execute knowledge at will? We cannot carry the ocean of consciousness or a total knowledge in ourselves because we are a living organism. And masters have this thing coming into them. Realized men have it passing through them. They don't say one moment their consciousness is here or there. They don't tie it up. But they have peace all the time. That's why Jesus is a good example for Westerners who are acquainted with his mission and life. The peace I give is not the world give I. He don't give that type of peace. The world gives you another kind of peace. We don't argue, we don't fight. This is the world's type of peace. Let's be friends. So every time you're leery, if he is really friendly with you, we negotiate for peace. We are doubtful though. Any moment we liable to, claws at each other, or find out that he ain't a friend. You know what I mean? The peace is not there. Why? Because too many pressures, too many desires involved. Now when the peace comes from within yourself, with all your material pressures, all your material desires and possessions, which can be umpteen big, and you can get this peace that cuts out these internal tensions like that, you have found your Christ in yourself. You have come back home to the divine. This peace is in us. Right in us. It's nowhere else. Nowhere else can we find it. Now Shakespeare goes another way by saying, happiness is nowhere to be found but in a contented mind. Well, let's look at this statement and see if really it's the contented mind and not the contents of the mind. If we say happiness is nowhere to be found but in the contents of the mind, what you have in the mind will bring you peace, will bring you happiness. But if you don't have anything there that is worthwhile looking at, then they're only what I call psychological antiques or physiological antiques, old verbal ideas or images, fears and so forth. You have an unhappy mind. Unhappy mind is restless. There is no more peace, there is no love. But if your ideas, your concepts, your attitudes, all in here are the type that brings you joy, the type of memories that you can recall. And as they say in the song, count your blessings. Here, inside here, personal experiences, you look in and see the percentages of those that are unhappy and those that are happy. Contents. Then we can have something to build on. So, we must realize that peace is in us, and God is aching for our love, that this peace can flow. He's aching for us, since He is the life energy, and He's become us. He's aching in every muscle, in every cell, to withdraw from the external realm. Now, the external realm is involved with emotions. That means motion, emoting, every form of energy going out. Everything you do is to put the energy from within your mechanism outwards, to express it outward more and more till it becomes obsessed. And they say you're a very emotional, unstable individual. You're liable to get upset very fast. But it's only because you are probed and pulled outwards. Now, so if we understand emotion pulling us outwards, where are we going to find God, which is supposed to be inwards, as Jesus says? Or any one of these great masters who lived on this earth plane? They say inside. Now, the opposite of emotion is devotion. That is a conscious withdrawal from the five senses, seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, and touch, from this world of matter back into this temple of consciousness and joy, which is spirit, peace, serenity. These are four words that we intellectually understand, but we don't experience in our mechanism. When we can experience joy, serenity, peace, we'll also experience bliss or ecstasy, which gives us wisdom. But until we experience it in terms of the physical nature, it's only a mental concept.
May I ask there, when you say you, bliss and peace has to be experienced more than just mentally?
Yes. You have to experience this condition. To describe it is like you're tired and you go to sleep and you wake up. And when you wake up, you feel refreshed. And the body seems to have gone through a change. Mm-hmm. That is something you have physically felt and can relate it and recall it back to your physical senses mm-hmm. and objective world. Mm-hmm. Now, while you were asleep, you did not know if you're a man or a woman. Mm-hmm. And right away, you are in doubt as to the experience. But all you can say is, I had a pretty good sleep last night.
Because you're rested now.
You're rested now. Now, let's see, in the sleep, were you restless or were you peaceful? You have no way to check that unless somebody is observing you under the condition. But if it was peaceful, and peaceful sleep is the, doesn't necessarily mean that you don't twist and toss on the bed. You can twist and toss a million times in the bed in 8 hours and still have peaceful rest. You understand? Or don't move on the bed and still have restless rest, you see? Because the conditions are varying inside of you. You don't realize that. Now, when you can recognize peace as an actual feeling of recharging the body, an actual cooling down of the senses, an actual settling of the mind, an actual opening up and being aware of the colors in the room brighter, objects become sharper in their shape and form, sounds become clearer, and you feel bubbling joy coming up, you know you have this buoyant feeling. Now, the more you get into the spiritual life, this condition begins to flow through you. You begin to regenerate your body. You do not degenerate no more. Your body will gradually exhibit higher and higher degrees of buoyancy, health, and awareness. And this is a physical expression of the psychological temple.
Now, I wish there's somebody else that I wish could have heard that, because that's one thing I've been wondering exactly. If if the meditation is going as it should, wouldn't health and buoyancy and energy and all of this be the outcropping of it?
Yes, because you shall know them by their works, by their fruits shall you know them. And that doesn't mean all who walk with the cross in their hands shouting, Lord, Lord, Lord. As a fellow once said to me, he said, Adana, how can you side with these vegetarians who open all these health shops? They look sicker than the people who eat meat. I says, give them time. Give them time. They are working at a level and they're cleaning themselves up. The time will come and they will outshine you when your body tapers off at a certain age, starts breaking down. And there is no way for the tissues to build back. Theirs will build.
And most of them were half dead before they got into it. That's
right.
Why they got into
Quite true. Then this is what we have to realize. They have actually come in to a higher concept of living to build their psychological nature up and that spiritual temple. And therefore, they are doing labor work now. They are laying the foundation. You cannot assess the building by looking at the foundation. As well, Sonny, my friend, an artist, he was painting a picture once, and I looked at it, and I said, well, it doesn't look like that. In my mind, I didn't see it like that. It's a little shade darker. He says, shut up. You're looking at a half-finished job. In your mind, you see it perfect. This is half-finished. I'm working with my hands, you see? So I realized the same thing is happening to these people.
It's a half-finished job.
It's a half-finished job. They're not finished, so you cannot condemn them. But in time, this health, this peace, this serenity, and this inner conviction that the joy you feel in your body is God contact. It is there. Give yourself time to get this conviction established in yourself. And don't be afraid that you're taking time because you've stayed away so long from your Creator, our beloved Father. What do you expect? He's going to, overnight, we're going to just wake up all realized individuals. We are making an effort to build a temple that he could dwell in the midst thereof. Build me a temple that I may dwell in the midst thereof. I is the life consciousness, the life power, God. So life brings more health. Life brings consciousness or expanded consciousness. And it brings joy. Now, in terms of material abundance, yes, it is there. I have come that you may have life more abundantly. Life more abundantly. We're not going to find that the spiritual man, after he starts building his spiritual temple in terms of himself, on any less off, all things flow to him then by the law of divine magnetism.
It's a sort of a magnetizing of his nature, isn't it? In a sense, so that things of a like nature are attracted or something like that?
Yes, it is of a fact because it's based on the law of attraction. And if you, why the sages do emphasize right thinking, right attitude, is because wrong thinking, wrong attitudes tear down the mechanism. And you have more unhealthy people around you as a result of wrong thinking, wrong acting, wrong living. Now, more unhealthy people you have, the atmosphere becomes polluted with psychic waves. Every wrong thought is already there. It's like looking at a whole mess of overexposed negatives. They're no good to no one. They're all there, and you're cluttering up the cosmos with your wrong thinking. It's cluttered up half-finished thinking. They're all half-finished and overexposed. There's no value. Just imagine that a person walks in the room, and a room is very tense. Now, you've been in places where you walk in, and the room is tense from the way people think. And you can sense it if you're able to see it. They're like half-finished, overexposed. Negatives up there. Now you walk in a room and the vibrations are pleasant, you sense it. And if you can see it, you see the complete thought form. They're there. Now the churches have been impregnated already with an attitude over repetition. But if the individual will go to the church with the fact that there is more than just what he's getting, then that church will vibrate more. Healings will occur in that church. Now, if he comes to his own home and has the same reverence and attitude, then greater things begin to occur in his life, life more abundantly. It's here, now, not tomorrow. And we're the only people, I think, in the outside realm that pray and hope it happens. Well, I've been among the Indians on the reservation, and when they pray, they start a prayer meeting about 8 o'clock at night, and it finishes at 8 o'clock next morning. So they really pray. But in every one of their prayer, till dawn, and though they may ask for healing for someone, it is always now, Lord Jesus, now. Not tomorrow, no, they want to see it now. And it's amazing, before dawn comes around, that individual who they're praying for usually gets up from his sick bed and walk out. The vibrations and attitude are there established.
Is it a lasting thing too?
It is a lasting thing, and doctors are amazed that the prayer healing of the done on these reservations do manifest. Though there are many cases where the individual may have an operation and they're told, but they still pray for that person, that the doctor would be the right doctor to perform and that person will pull through that operation. It's a rare case that you hear that they turn it out bad. And they pray. But in our own churches, we just go and pray and that's it, it's finished. These people are living Christianity. They're trying to experience it in terms of themselves, not just mentally alone. They want to experience this peace. They want to experience joy. They may not have much in terms of physical wealth because they live in a very barren country. But for what they do have, they seem to enjoy it. Now, as this civilization gets into their areas, they have the same complications as modern man has. When he starts to step out from his agricultural background into an industrial environment, to buy a car or a truck, it means they have to find jobs to maintain themselves. So they have to go without. People in this environment still go without for many things, for their children, for their big house. We do these things. It's natural. But our churches don't help us through the periods when we have dry spells in our lives, in our daily problems. We can't go to church and say, Reverend, would you pray for us through this dry spell of consciousness, or this particular period when we have it rough? We have no way to turn. But with these people on the reservation, they go to their little native church and they hold a prayer meeting for the person who is having a difficult time. They find out he's having a difficult time. He asks for a prayer meeting and they pray to get him through that difficult time. Even if he doesn't get the financial resources coming, in a strange way he gains the strength and the courage to stick it up. He doesn't crack up. We crack up. And we've got it better off than they, where we can turn for many sources of help to prevent this cracking up. They don't have any to turn to. Yet they only have this simple faith, simple confidence in the peace that they feel in their prayer or their meditation.
You know, the amazing thing is that there are some countries that I've always admired so much, and that's been Norway and Sweden and Denmark, and I think there are no three countries over in Europe who have conquered slums and poverty or anything to the extent that they have. Almost, there's not such a thing known as slum areas, so I understand, in Norway and Sweden, and yet their suicide rate is higher than any place else in the world, and their juvenile delinquency is extremely high.
Quite true.
And their family units are breaking up.
Mm-hmm.
Their family units are breaking up. they've...
Yes, but as far as abundance, I mean abundance in the material way, they're definitely taken care of.
Their
it's
initiative
though,
has been removed.
They're completely a welfare state.
Their initiative has been removed.
Yes.
Interest.
Mm-hmm.
See, they have attitude already.
You have to have motivation.
No, but they didn't build that
sort of... Their motivation and their interest.
Right. They have no interest, then how can they render service?
And then there's no one to render service to because their taxes are taken and the service is given.
Right,
and so
true.
They have a useless existence.
Well, that's what the government has done for the Negro people up north by feeding them generation after generation. Everything. They've destroyed their motivation. They have none. And yet... The Harlem, every morning, they say, is littered completely. These are people who are supposed to be starving and driving rats out, and yet the streets are littered with beer cans every morning, just solid.
Well, that isn't the solution, but if more people had the attitude that Adano is trying to help us get,
yeah,
then we wouldn't
motivation.
Need the welfare state.
Right. And this is actually...
This is the harder solution.
It is really a regression in man's thinking. To let go of his initiatives.
Mm-hmm. And give it
he's
to
regressing.
Stranger, right?
You see, actually, he's
then
reaching.
He becomes a non-entity, frankly.
Right, he's instead of. You see, he's remaining in self-centeredness,
mm-hmm.
the rajasic consciousness,
mm-hmm.
which we call the rajasic consciousness. He remains in self-centeredness and no longer think in terms of moving out to the next level of development.
Or the next man.
Next man, right. Let's rest for a while with the talk and we do a little meditation and we'll come back to some more talk. Because meditation is what feeds the soul and talk can only feed the mind.
If you got one.
Right, in our consciousness, if we really go deep into the spirit, it's there. Everything that is being said, you can have. We have all lived it in some form or other. And the last statement is true when the realization comes to you. I and my Father are one, or you and I are one. We are all one with the cosmos. We are soul. We don't have a body. We are not bodies. We are not minds. We are soul. We possess the body and work through it. But if we understand that we are soul and understand our oneness with God, life, we are free. Now, free. Free from the repercussions of our thinking. That is what salvation really is. Because as you sow, that you reap. And what are we going to need to be freed from? If a man thinking his heart, that is what he is. There must be something wrong in his thinking to make him suffer. So, if we realize that we are soul, and this is what the scriptures point out, come let us make man in our own image and likeness. Image is the atomic structure. Likeness is the cosmic nature, cosmic intelligence, or cosmic attitude. Male and female create ye them, and he breathed the breath of life into man, and man became a living soul, not a living body or a living mind. Soul, big difference than mind or body or spirit, because God is the oversoul or cosmic self. He has become us. Now, when we realize that daily by merging in meditation and looking at the light that we see in the consciousness, the light shines in the darkness, but the darkness comprehends it not. We have a brain that is working away inside, radiating cosmic light. We can turn in, as Jesus says, when the eyes are single visioned, the body is full of light. We can see that inner light, feel its presence, and know that has become us. In other words, we are all a manifestation of a divine atom. You see, we're living in the atomic age we're experienced atomic knowledge, but we don't have reverence for its true being and it being in us or becoming us. Until we understand these functions properly and return back to that source, it is not possible for us to be free from the repercussions of our thinking. And that is why we reap what we sow. That is where the law of cause and effect comes into our lives. We call it karma. But this is based on thinking, attitude. Until we establish proper attitude, or the Beatitudes, Sermon on the Mount, or any one of the great sages, the attitude of love, basically. I heard a lecture Sunday about the prodigal man and the prodigal son and his father, and they made more of an issue of the clothes and the food they were going to give the son than the love that was to exchange between father and son. And this is what has been lost sight in the whole story. They made an issue of the boy living in one country and wasting his heritage and living on slop. We're in the soul's return to itself. We're not interested how long or how crusty that soul has lived in ignorance. We're interested in the fact it got back there and it was recognized, it was reinforced, reinstated in its true nature. The moment we get away from the fact that we are bodies or we are minds, we possess souls, we will keep on living with the repercussions of our thinking. We will still suffer from it. Until we stop that type of thinking and realize that we are soul, from the word go, then we realize we have laid the foundation for love. We have to live love. Love is a very difficult thing to live because it demands the utmost of our consciousness. And it demands a tremendous inner honesty with ourselves. And very few of us are willing to be self-honest. And this is only natural because we have to conform to the various environments that have forced us into the mold.
Do you think we always are even aware that we're dishonest? It's a very subtle sort of thing. I think often we're dishonest without knowing it.
Yes, we are dishonest without knowing it because we are ignoring. We are living in a state of ignoring, ignorance, to ignore what we are. Until we, you see, the sage once said, God, spirit, mind, love, and tranquility. He says, these are words. But these words have half meanings to some people. They don't have real meaning. They don't have real experience to some people. Yet to those who have experience in terms these words really represent and can produce what it do represent in terms of the physical nature, then we have lived it. So Master Yogananda used to say, I'm not interested in the people who talk of the Bible. I'm interested in the man who can live one sentence of the Bible. If his whole life was representing one sentence in the Bible, that man is living the Bible. That man is experiencing the Bible. If he never knew anything else and didn't do anything else in terms of spiritual culture, if he would only live one sentence and make this one sentence his guiding light of inner life, that man is a living Bible unto himself. He says the rest are going to flow automatically to him. The knowledge is going to flow because he will pull it. That man is natural with that consciousness. And this is the basis of the inner peace. Now, in the meditation, you find that you are in a state of peace. That is, you're not agitated. You're not getting restless. We have thoughts that come and go, but we're not worrying about the thoughts coming and going, they will settle them of their own nature. Don't try to interfere with them, because then you are taking your conscious will to move something that the mind has to do. All you have to realize is, like a bronco rider, that's the soul, who gets on the bronco, bucking horse, and hooks himself into it and let the horse run itself till it gets tired and stuck. Mm-hmm. And that's your mind. That horse is going to buck and buck and buck till it gets tired and says, well, I've exhausted every verbal concept, I know what I am. And then it reached the last thing and don't know anymore, ideas coming. Then the soul will shine through like a light. Pow! Right in this dark skull of ours, we'll see a flash of light. And light we know is white, but white light is colors. When it breaks itself, it breaks into colors. So we will see colors, not necessarily the pow of the white light, but when that happens, it is there and it breaks into colors. There are several colors in the consciousness. We are only interested in the three higher aspects of the light. And that is the goal, radiance, like a circle, so radiant light. And the inner part of the goal light is blue or opal blue or purple. And in this inner blue light, it flips like a five-pointed star. But coming down, it looks like a dove descending. So when John initiated Jesus, and Jesus saw the opening of the higher Christ center in himself, he heard within his inner consciousness, this descent of light is the beloved Sun, S-U-N, in which the cosmic is well pleased to manifest. When an individual recognizes his true heritage, his true kingdom or true nature, it is a pleasure for this consciousness to flow for the first time in a given brain that can recognize it. If you feel that peace comes and cuts out your problems like that, and you reconcile to nature, you have found it too. Light, peace, joy. These three words have more meaning in terms of actual experience and of a permanent nature. That you can hold on to this thing day and night, and it removes unconsciousness after a while. That there is no more unconsciousness as you experience when you go to sleep and do not know what you are. Now, isn't this what makes us afraid of ourselves? That we don't know what we are when we're asleep, and we don't know what we will be when we pass out of the frame when we die. So, the fear of the unconscious is the real fear that we call death. Now, when we realize this condition existing in ourselves, and we look in, as Jesus tells us to look in, and if we are patient with it, it'll open up. Even if we gotta say, Father, I love you, Father, I love you, or beloved Jesus, whatever, saint or sage, communion of the saints, these are all possible ways to make this consciousness open. And as much as we cry in our little corner, in our homes, we don't have to make a show in the public, in our own homes, our own inner temple, when thou prayest, retreat in the inner temple, pray wanting it now, wanting this realization that you are soul, wanting this constant peace, this constant joy that fills you beyond all understanding, that you can now walk out and face this hostile environment and not be of it, and yet be in it. A freed soul, freed while living, freed from what you call salvation, the Orientals call illumination, light, or enlightenment. At last you have found the liberation. Then you know it. You are free from the repercussions of your thinking. From that moment, all your attitude is going to be love. And strange as it seems, life abundance begins to flow. You, people say, you are so lucky, if you fall in mud, you come up smelling like honey. You see? Now, this takes care of all the inner problems, and this is why we must meditate. Any questions?
Well, I was just thinking of something you just said. Of course, it just dawned on me lately to begin thinking in those terms, but as long as you want something, as long as you're demanding something, it indicates in your consciousness you're separated from it.
Yes.
But if you affirm that you are that thing, it's only making true in your consciousness what actually is.
Yes.
You see, when we pray, and Jesus said, the Gentiles pray for food and clothing and so forth. Gentiles do not mean the non-Jew. See? And the Jew did not mean an Israelite, though we call the country Israel today. Thus has nothing to do with spiritual knowledges or the spiritual law. God is reality. He is the isness of all things manifest and unmanifest. And to be a child of God is to return back to reality in yourself. If you stay outside, you are like a lost sheep. Go unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Go unto those individuals who have strayed, kept their consciousness away from reality in themselves, and are locked up in this environment. Don't go unto the genteel, those who act like lambs, that wear lamb's clothing and are wolves in disguise, because they won't know the difference either. You see what I mean? They have that problem. Now, it isn't that the people who are engrossed in their five senses, living like lambs and are wolves in sheep's clothing, are not important for redemption. But until they have had enough of the problems of nature working on their mechanism, they are not going to be interested in the reality of themselves. Now, those who've had some glimpse of reality in themselves and can stick with it, those are the ones are lost, because they have deviated from that light. That they have seen the light, but did not have confidence in the light, could not rely that this thing is a slow process of patience and faith and inner realization. They deviate and went back out to the five senses, things that are more tangible now. They went back to the rituals, they went back to the ceremonies. They're afraid of themselves where they are. Now, when we look in ourselves, we see that this is going on all the time. Mm-hmm. And that is why we must go back to our inner self.
And know its divine nature.
It is the divine nature. Mm-hmm. And that is why we must meditate to verify these things.
It may take you a bit of while.
Yes. That clarify mental blocks? Mm-hmm. Or pulled out some of the rocks from out of the ruts. Now your mind can move forward to the next level.
No. Did you?
Any question?
You know Yogananda, Helen loaned me one of her 1929 magazines. And I was telling Paul tonight, one of the things that was interesting, we've heard so much of helping humanity, and we've also heard so much about selfishness being wrong, but he was pointing out in this how the helping of humanity, and how as we rise higher in consciousness and in understanding, all we actually do is rise higher in the type of selfishness that we have. He said he had quite an argument with a man one time about that. And it really, because they said that if you were not trying to please God and knew at the same time you were helping yourself by doing that which you knew was right, you wouldn't be helping humanity.
Right.
And it's only because of your desire to help humanity is really a desire to help yourself, only at a higher level.
Right.
Which I thought was very interesting. I never thought of divine selfishness.
Right.
That's about what it amounts to.
That is why he whipped the people out of the temple and got them out. Mm-hmm. That was the real reason too. Now, we live in a state of indifference all the time.
Indifference is something, you mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And this state is called by the sages tamasic inertia. It is a state that is dragging. We cannot live in that state all the time of indifference. Sooner or later, something will move us from indifference forward into activity, and that is called rajasic. But that activity is based on self-centeredness. There is not going any place but within its own orbit of activity. It's self-centered, so self-centered that it becomes the biggest ego in the universe. Everything is revolving around this self-centeredness. When the air is let out of the balloon of self-centeredness, it collapses, mental wreck. The individual is scared of existence now because he didn't build anything from within. The next outlet for him is the sattvic, or actions necessary to the to life. Any action that is necessary for the benefit of life would be a pure act, an act based on desirelessness. This is what is right, service. So we see interest, attitude, and service are the foundations and the walls of this psychological spiritual temple. You must build this. If you don't build these properly into the mechanism, this higher self can't work. It can't. You can't put up this building without setting up the basement, the foundation. Even those who build houses that build a roof first, they still got to build it, throw the cement, and put up the uprights for that roof to come on top. We can build a roof, but it's helpless by itself. That is, we can build parapsychology, and we can build meditation, or we can build astropsychology. These are. We can build it, but we don't have the thing to put it on anything. You see what I mean?
Is there such a thing as thinking on these things only long enough for them to be sort of incorporated? Well, what I mean is, when you start riding a bicycle, you know, you consciously know which way you turn the handlebars in order to stay upright. But after a while, after you've ridden a month or two, it's a sort of an automatic thing. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that you can dwell on these only so long? I mean, that you can dwell on them in a way so that the first thing you know, they're sort of automatic, and then you grow as the Louis grows.
Yes. That is what is going on.
That's a desirable result. That's a desirable result. Then you don't need the props like the directions for taking specific exercises when you understand the basic of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you do them by shortcut, you might say, automatically, as you showed us.
You can begin to do them very quickly.
The detail.
I mean, sort of automatically, but without too much conscious effort.
That's a good habit. Uh-huh. That's habit. Habit.
Yes, it is there. To reinforce that condition, meditation is important.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for those who don't understand what meditation really is, the word is an anagram. For centuries, they've been meditation meant doing like that and sitting and vegetating, you know. Starry-eyed individuals sitting, you see statues of them sitting down, and they think that's meditation. They're not supposed to be doing anything, these crazy oriental people. Just waste away their time sitting on some cave or mountain top. But the word is an anagram, and orientals never wrote this way. They always wrote this way. And until we understand what they were doing, we're going to see the word and books on it, but it's not bringing us closer to ourselves to understand what is done and how it is applied. We have anagrams, or we have words, abbreviated words made up in English, UNICEF, UN, and UNIVAC, and all these things. These are words made up, laser beam, maser. These are all words made up of the initial letters. In years to come, we wouldn't know the difference either. We can just use the term, and that's it. It's stuck with us. Meditation is M-E-D-I-T-A-T-I-O-N. The first M represents mental. E represents energy, because it's mental energy you're working with all the time. D represents direction. I represents individual, so it's a personal practice. No two people can do the same thing with any, they can group together and practice group meditation. But your experience is my experience is going to differ at the moment, and our observations. But the common peace is present, common understanding is there. Now, individual, it's T stands for thought, individual thought. A, activities, the activities of thought that you're observing. T, towards. I, intuitive, not sensory, intuitive. O, observation and oneness. This is a dual function. First you observe intuitive, then you become one. N, nature, noumena, not phenomena. So we see meditation is mental energy directing the individual thought activities toward an intuitive observation and oneness of the noumena God. Now we see we have science, philosophy, and religion all in one process. Now, a scientist has to use his five senses plus extensions of those five senses to observe nature or the noumena phenomena. So we have x-rays, fluoroscopes, radar, TV, microscopes and televisions, all these different things to extend the five senses. The mystic or the realized man has his intuitive self. Now, intuition don't mean a hunch in the term that we use the term. It means knowing from within directly, independent of the senses. And so directly that there is no mistake. And it has to be awakened by meditation, by a light process. When thine eyes are single vision, the body is full of light. We see directly into the structure of nature, God, the very noumena holding up the universe, and we become one with him by merging in him and accepting our responsibility of having become us. We then realize that we have to revere him. We have to revere everything now. No matter if it looks like that machine, there is a respect for it. So, in treating the consciousness and in rendering healing light, man first heals himself by being receptive. And as many as received, to them gave he the powers to become sons of God. Sons, S-U-N, not S-O-N. Sons of light. God is light. And little sons of light, the brain emanating this light. As many as can see this light, it comes in. Now, as it comes in, as I said before, it has three colors. The light breaks up into gold, blue, and white, like a five-pointed star. Descending down, it looks like a dove. The five points represent ether, earth, air, and water, fire, the primordial functions of nature. It descends into us, and from the point between the eyebrow, it descends down into the heart. And the meditation is to go in and feel this thing rising in us, and merging with the peace all the time, and accepting the consciousness. Now, as we go in, and we understand that God has become us, now we can treat. First, we treat each one in the room, by receiving this consciousness in this light, this feeling of joy or peace, and it makes us, it anoints us, which we call grace, the flood of light into the body. And then you feel it emanating, enveloping everyone in the room and seeing them whole in body, mind, and spirit. Then the entire building, because the walls represent the creative force too. If the tongues of men of peace were cut out, the stones will shout peace. So that is part of the nature, an inanimate object. You have to send out that healing vibration from your consciousness out and satisfy, pacify all these things and see them go back into their normal frequency. So you treat out the entire mineral kingdom. That includes all the galaxies, the entire vegetable kingdom, the entire animal kingdom, the entire human kingdom, and the entire spiritual kingdom. One person says, well, you have to heal the spiritual kingdom. I said, they need it more than we, because they need us to pray so that they can work for us. The higher beings can only work if we are in tune with them. They cannot interfere. It's like the radio waves in this room are flowing, but it cannot interfere if you don't want to turn on the radio or the TV. Who's going to make it work? So you see, our little 25% activity brings the rest in. We are an activity. See? And then we radiate it back to the cosmic self, God, centering into the heart. It has to come back to your heart, because the pure in heart sees God, not the pure in mind. There is a light that flows in the heart that shuts the heart off and allow you to be free from this shell and realize that you are soul. You are soul. So having like many clothes, you are a human being wearing suits. You shut them off one at a time. But you know this, and you go into yourself, and you meditate. Now, this may be far ahead from what you've read, or maybe not that much in comparison to what you read. It may be very simple. Don't look at its simplicity, or don't look at this being complicated or far-fetched. It is within our own mechanism. We have to understand it and have confidence in it. And it don't require any strange practice to pray to God. Even Jesus did it very simple. Look inside. It's here. Nowhere else, and feel it here. We can't go any place outside this mechanism that is going to work. We don't know any other place. You can't feel him here. And you can't see him here. You feel me? It has to be centered. But I talk too much.
You haven't said the same thing since you've been here.
And then you were brought out, and I think I read it once. She had read somewhere, and I should probably not even mention it, but this light that goes to the heart, is there such a thing as the perfect image of man in the center of the heart? Is there a place there where the perfect image of you, you know, your soul, is there such a thing as that? I'm not putting it very well, very
if you
articulate.
Do. You see your higher self.
Is that how you connect up with, do you connect up with that, or is there something there to connect up with?
You see, the pure in heart sees God.
Yes.
That is, you see your higher self. Remember, you're not going to see somebody sitting on a throne and waiting with long beard and a pickaxe or something and an hourglass thing ringing a bell, waiting for you to recognize, here, me, I'm God, waiting for you. I'm so glad you evolved over these billions of years to recognize I was waiting for you. I'm not going to see anything like that. You will find your higher self. Now, your higher self is your Christ self, and you are linked to it.
Is it light, or is it a form, or is it... I don't mean that old man with a beard. I get
everyone, it has to do with an aspect of consciousness. The highest aspect of consciousness man wants of his God to materialize for him or congeal for him is form of human shape. This is something that is an affinity in his being. A cow would like to have a bigger cow to represent God for him. A lion would like a bigger lion. The fact is, the futility of the mechanism makes us fear the cosmos and its immensity. So we have to imprison it in form to have relationship. Do you follow me there, Paul? This is our problem. This little mechanism feels so futile with its limitations. But when it reaches out,
and see the immensity of its being, that it is a consciousness, then form loses its meaning. Now, you will see Jesus, you will see all the masters in form, crystallize as pillars in the Father's house. To him that overcometh, I will not send forth a second time, and I will make him a pillar in the house of my Lord. That is the man who has reached realization and is freed from the repercussions of his thinking. He has overcome and will not repeat it a second time, that is reincarnate, will become a pillar in the house of the Lord. He will resurrect, permanent in the cosmos, rendering loving service to undeveloped beings. You will see them there, and they will greet you as an elder brother, an elder sister. You are coming into their brotherhood of light, the brotherhood of eternal consciousness. And the Father aspect will manifest as Jesus. The Mother aspect will manifest as any other saint who loved the Mother aspect.
Won't necessarily be Jesus, though, would it?
No.
Could it be any?
Any great saint who looked to God in the aspect he wants, the devotee will find him as that. And if you don't want no form, you will see him as the cosmic light, the germinal light, the white, clear germinal light, responsible for manifestation, existing in the black light, which you call darkness. It is both light, one of a white germinal nature, and one of the soil in which it works, the black light. So we say we plant seed into black earth, it sprouts forth. It always splits in two. We say the germinal light, living in the dark light of consciousness, sprout forth as a dual being, Father, Mother, aspect, God.
It doesn't have anything to do with density, does it, this darker light?
It's density. Mm-hmm. And it's our relationship to it. But you will see your higher self. And you, what is your higher self? You will see another you, far more refined, devoid of all the densities of limitations of the you that you look at now. That's all. And you will know you are a son of God. You are a child of God. You are a higher self. Freed.
Thank you so much.
You know?
I like to think about this concepts of God, or in fact the concept of anything for that matter, is being a temporary platform. You reach up to it and crawl on it, and it may take you 20 years or two years, it doesn't make any difference, but when you get there, then you see your horizon is farther away, the vision or the concept changes.
Yes.
Until gradually you crawl on a new platform, but all each one of these platforms is tremendously important and helpful in your evolution. I know that, as Adano said, when I was a very small child, I thought of God as this old man with a long white beard. But that concept served me very well.
Oh, yes.
Until a new one arose. I know, I was amazed in reading, I'm sure you've read the Mahatma letters, where the I don't know whether it's the Master Cage or the Master Moyo, saying that, you speak of God, we know of no such being.
Yes.
Now these are masters speaking. So you see, all our concepts have to change by the time we get
right there.
Right.
Now, Yogananda wanted to enter that state of consciousness, so he went to meet his teacher. And his teacher touched him on the heart. The heart stopped, and the life energy oozed out through the entire cellular system. And he saw the entire cosmos and cosmos and beings, every level that you can see, it went there. And when he came back into his physical frame, he was still doubtful that he saw God. So he came to his master one day, he says, I haven't found God, I've been with you so long, I haven't found God. So his guru says, I hope you don't think you're looking for somebody sitting on a throne, saying he is God. Or you're thinking that the possession of miraculous powers, when you get into that state, makes you from God. He says a man can have all these things and still find that he doesn't have the realization. As Jesus says, what a profit of man to gain the whole world and lose his soul, not recognizing his higher self. And his higher self lives in levels of activity of service which is infinite, world without end. Where are you going to render service? Only in this little earth planet? With our little understanding that with a few little telescopes, that there's nobody out on the other side, we're so pompous in our activity. Boy, we are wonderful human beings to think in this whole galaxy. You look at night and say, millions upon millions of stars. Here we are, a few little worms walking around. We are the supreme.
Well, you only have to get up in an airplane to begin to kind of realize your absolutely nothingness, really. I had that amazing trip. Of course, I don't ride off in an airplane. It isn't old stuff to me. I just ride once in a great while, so each time I go, it's a new experience. And I had the most amazing feeling up there looking down. It gives you such a different perspective.
Yeah.
And for once, you feel your insignificance and the fact that nothing's important unless you play your part in the anthill, like any normal ant should, you know.
Well, tell you something, Merlin. Every night you go to bed and you wake up.
Yeah.
What the way you felt yesterday and when you went to sleep and the way you feel today is different. Yesterday is a memory to you. Right now, this Merlin is entirely different. When you go to bed tonight and tomorrow when you wake up, you're going to feel different. So if you understand this principle, sleep is an illustration at a lower level of levels upon levels of consciousness, being. How you feel, how your attitude would be, this is yourself going on. Living and dying daily, as St. Paul says, that is the same thing. Now that is deeper physiological actions, that you can live and die daily in the Lord. There is no end, because every time you come out of that state, you are evolved up that level of consciousness. Now we came here tonight at a certain level, with a certain feeling, a certain attitude. We are not the same people right at this moment. We have gone through so many levels of our own consciousness, and our mechanisms have made so many changes. We will not notice this until we assess ourselves by tomorrow, what we have done tonight, you see, and what is happening. We are only assessing this in 24 hours. Let us assess this in terms of one lifespan or one body form. Can you see the what has happened to how many body forms you might have been exposed to have the same consciousness, and now moving on to higher body forms for higher consciousness? Don't you see how divine justice is well worked out with tremendous unending opportunities for growth? No end to this process. That's why, to him that overcometh, I will not send forth a second time. That is, repeat the same old pattern, but make him a pillar in the house of the Lord. He will be rendering loving service.
You should put it in the
your
center,
higher self. You will see a higher Merlin, who far more of all the qualities of the higher self that are lacking in the lower self. Walt Whitman says, when I saw my higher self, he realized he could not let his higher self be debased by the lower self no more. So he too had to realize that once the higher self recognized the lower self and the lower self recognized the higher self, one has to act out its role. He's in the body, they have to live in the body. The higher self is still going to be a silent witness.
Yeah, but as that silent self begins to be more and more in your consciousness, your lower body becomes lighter and lighter. I don't even know how to explain it, but it becomes less dense, so to speak. Less...
Right, okay.
Heavy or something.
Well, let me ask you a question there, Don, if I'm following this right. Of course, the churches are against any checking or experimentation beyond certain points.
Mm-hmm.
But... some of the scientific doctors have gone to extremes, which I won't go into now, to weigh the spirit or the soul. At the time of death, there is always a half ounce change.
Yes.
At the point of death.
Yes.
I realize that
humidity and many, many other factors the scientists have taken out of it.
Yeah.
But it boils down to there's something that weighs a half an ounce that leaves the body at the point of death. It shakes the scale once.
Yeah.
A very fine scale, but it's always a half ounce.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is that? The spirit or soul that's leaving the body?
Well, let me explain that in terms of another experiment that we can see. In a human being, we can't capture the thing that has escaped out. But let us subject a piece of material to an experiment where we can capture what is escaping out of it. Let's take a piece of tungsten, 4 ounces, and bombard it for a while. And let it cool. It takes about 20 minutes to bombard it. And
bombard it with what?
With a neutron.
Mm-hmm.
In a neutron chamber or an atomic pile. Let's bombard it. And then let it cool down. And we have a residue. Now, if we weigh that residue, we'll find we have lost 1 ounce. Now we have 3 ounces left. But the energy is, where did it go? Where did it escape that lost that weight? Now, if we bombard it again, we find that it takes us 40 minutes to bombard it, to loosen it up. And when it cools down again, it became 2 ounces.
Instead of 3.
Instead of 3. Now we bombard it again, but it takes us 80 minutes to bombard those 2 ounces. And we find it reduces itself to an ounce. Now, we bombard it again, and it's taking 160 minutes, but it cools down back and nothing is lost. It still come back to an ounce. And no matter how we bombard it, it's still taking 160 minutes to bombard it.
It reaches
it's still coming back to an ounce. Because this is a phenomenon in time will be observed. It's the same relationship that is happening to our mechanism. We have made a change in some way. The time capsulated from one thing to another, or it escalated in fact, where the mass condensed. Now, we weigh an ounce less when we die. Is that the weight you said?
Half ounce.
That energy that's in this structure is a form of matter in its own density.
Much finer and higher,
and it's released and it's there. Now, it will feel like cobweb if you pass through it.
The ectoplasm.
Right. Protoplasm or ectoplasm. It will feel like cobweb when you touch it. Now, masters who have realigned the atomic structure of the body by meditation, they don't lose anything. This is one phenomenon. They don't lose anything. They are the same individual. But
they change the texture?
What happens now? Here you're looking at a carbon-based body. The carbon-based body throws a shadow. When we transform this body into a silicon-based body like glass, there is no shadow. Now I walk, I leave a footprint, an impression, because I'm carbon-based already. When I'm silicon-based, or a harder carbon, which is like a diamond now, I leave no impression. I leave no shadow. Therefore, light is passing through me, and you cannot see me at the range of calibration of consciousness of vision. This calibration is what we accept. Extend the calibration to where we say clairvoyant, we see where the light is passing through that. The individual has not gone anywhere, he's right here. Well, we got to understand that the atomic sciences in which we're living all the time, and we got to understand that this is God, or consciousness, if you want to call it, or spiritual knowledge. It is the same thing. We have a carbon body.
which throws off a shadow, which the light impression makes. And if, you know, silicons today, if you take silicons and you coat an object, it how much temperature it can resist? The army has tried it out on a little piece of paper or a piece of plate. They coat it with silicons and expose it to about nearly 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. They didn't even bend it. Now they take it and coat it on an automobile and expose it to 200 below Fahrenheit, minus 200, and still it didn't affect it. So we're seeing something strange about the silicon in the structure. Now silicon passes light because that is glass, which we call a silica sand. We apply heat to it, it expands, it becomes glass, it allows light to pass through. Now, if we have the same chemical structure within us, 16 basic chemicals plus trace elements, we've got it already in here. We've got a brain with 10 billion cells to the 25,000 power. We haven't begun to use that yet. We're only using 1/10 portion of it. We don't use the 360 degree angle of the brain focus. So if we learn how to accelerate by breathing, which is hyperoxygenation or hypoventilation, we will gradually change the cellular structure. We change it and we shed off carbon. Now let's see what this scientist came here to teach. We will verify from him the science of Kriya Yoga. Here we are. Kriya Yoga is a simple psychophysiological method by which the human blood is decarbonized and recharged with oxygen. Now, today I was asked, what would a modern man look like in the year 2000 as we enter into space, more space flight? Man would look exactly as he looked, but because he has controlled the conditions to survive in more miniature forms and learned to survive less and less in solids and liquids, he's going to learn to utilize the oxygen in his entire tissues, which is 80% liquids already. Now what the water? What all is on? H2O? We have it already locked up in us. What is breath? Oxygen. We've got it already locked up in us. Now, let's see. It says decarbonize and recharge with oxygen. We have to decarbonize the process in order to utilize the principle of light. The atoms of this extra oxygen are transmuted into life current to rejuvenate the brain and spinal centers. By stopping the accumulation of venous blood, the yogi is able to lessen or prevent the decay of tissues. The advanced yogi transmutes his cells into energy. Elijah, Jesus, and Kabir and other prophets were past masters in use of Kriya, by which they caused their bodies to materialize and dematerialize at will. Now, we can, by understanding this process, it's an electrolysis process that we are doing. Nature is doing it for us. Don't think nature is not doing this for us. She's doing it so slow, at her rate, it will require a body to live a million years for the brain to express this whole thing. And she's doing it at her rate. Every 7 years she's releasing one little function in the brain. This is what is happening.
This is what your Kriya is supposed to speed up.
You're right. Kriya is supposed to speed it up in a period of 40 years. It takes 40 years to take a moronic brain to full cosmic conscious brain. This is an act.
But if you are a moron, you can
You'll break through. You'll go faster.
But considering the long haul, we're not much
of
a moronic brain, huh?
Right.
No, I think you're right. By comparison, what would the potential is?
But having arrived at cosmic consciousness, that is not the end of our existence.
That's the beginning?
That's almost the end for me. I feel like I've done something.
No, because cosmic man has work to do. What's he going to do? You think he's just going to flit around like a with a pair of fractured wings and a broken heel or somewhere wrong with a place on broken
heel. Well, I'm going to give you like it shall be given.
Or have some kind of a monkey chain hanging him and flying around. That's right. No, he's cosmic man. And there are civilizations upon civilizations in the cosmos, in the making of the cosmos already, that are not yet materialized by man. As man delves into his consciousness of the cosmic nature, he's going to see prototypes, he's going to see all the different structures of future architecture, future manifestations, and as he brings it down to the level of manifestation, he would move on to that point.
Well, he's also aiding in the evolution of the material world around him. As he becomes more evolved himself, he evolves the world around him.
If I be lifted up, all men is lifted up. This is the meaning when he says the man has to go back into himself and create interest. Don't let the spiritual interests die in the person. That's why if he has the attitude which is love, love the Lord thy God with all thy mind and heart and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself, this is first basic. But then this basic thing has to have, if you take the word love and revolve it around, it means evolve, leaving out O-V-E, again is love, but E-V-O-L-V-E, it's evolving out, it has to reach out. So it reaches out by interest, by motivation. It reaches out by service. Now, only those who have exposed themselves to this particular condition or honest with themselves know that this thing exists. There's no one else can convince you, because you have to prove it to yourself that if you don't have an interest or no motivation, you can't render service. It's like the wings, you see. Now, when you're rendering service or having motivation, you're going to be involved with people. Who are you going to do it to? Can't do it to this. They don't need it. It's still another human being. There is where the problem comes in. Because human beings are the product of time. When they came into manifestation, they came in at a particular time. That moment decides their whole psychological makeup. So we have to know astropsychology. We have to know people thoroughly. How they function, we call astrology today. We have to understand people at their time sequences, why they act and react, their 12 types, or because of the zodiac. Now, if our space program is repeating something that they was once condemned as charlatan practices, why are they called it Gemini and Jupiter and every crazy name? But why don't they call
it back to the astral
something
right,
else?
You're going to the right location.
Because we do have an established zodiac already up there. It's not going to go any place. We're running into it. Now, once we know astrology or astropsychology, then we can recognize parapsychology or extrasensory perceptions. This is the other nature of man. Then we recognize the spiritual nature of man, which is meditation. Preparing, then when the two merge, we have realization. So man has to build this consciousness, but start someplace.
I don't know, I can ask a question on astrology. I was reading an article by, I think it was Cyril Fagan the other day, on sidereal astrology, pointing out that everybody else is making a mistake here, that for one thing, the Aquarian age is not beginning now, but will not begin until around, I think it was 2376 A.D.,
mm-hmm.
based on sidereal astrology. Have you
read
anything on sidereal astrology?
That's what he was trying to do.
You just have to keep beating your eyes.
Exactly. The last convocation I was hearing one astronomer talking in at Harmony Grove in L.A., he figured out that around the 2200 period, 2300.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's say, we give or take a few hundred, we're here 2000. We all the Piscean influences are off, and we're in the Aquarian. See,
this is not Aquarian.
To be exact, Aquarian. We're not in the Aquarian age. We are in the cusp of the Piscean Aquarian age. You see, we're in the cusp. So, a few years. Let's say we come up.
Well, as long as you're not going to quibble over a few
hundred years.
Well, then I haven't any questions.
No, because I said the other night, around the year 2000, we're coming into the Aquarian age.
The Piscean year is, we're in the cusp right now. The cusp is fading out, you see.
Cyril Fagan has checked and checked and rechecked, and he's just about right if he said...
Yeah, it is about that period, to be exactly on the node of the Aquarian age, we will be just on that point then, in full swing. So let's say, the first 200 of the year 2000, we have just entered what is called a moving up arc, and towards the year 2000, Piscean age all has been washed out already. We just slipped out of our clutches. From now to the next 30 years, let's say from now to the next 30 years, we're coming out of all the influences of the Piscean impact of the cusp, of the Aquarian cusp.
You know, Paul, I have an idea. Cyril Fagan is getting all his information through meditation because of things he has said in his articles. Things have come to him, and he doesn't spell it out, but he gives them as the gospel, and in other words, he has checked them and double checked them, and
according to what information he's gotten. Well, I'll tell you what I read the other day that nearly threw me, especially in view of the autobiography, and that is man. He was saying that since man's body seems to be such a high percentage of carbon, it stands to reason that his prime food necessity then is carbon.
Which I thought. No starch.
No, no.
What food can we eat with a lot of carbon?
Well, that's mostly what we eat already. That's what we don't want to.
You see, the sages tell us we must follow soul and nutrition. Then that is a very low carbon content. Though it's a carbohydrate product, fruit or vegetable, leafy vegetables, they are of a 5% bracket. And they only allow up to 8% bracket. Now you look at all the Oriental cooking. Their vegetables of a carbohydrate nature ends up about 10% in the 10% bracket. They don't go over the 10% bracket up to the 15% or 20% bracket.
And they mean they don't use beans and lentils?
No, they don't use none of the potatoes and stuff. They're the higher bracket of the carbohydrate. Though they use rice, because the rice falls between 10 and 12%.
Is that all of it? Carbon in?
Yeah, carbohydrate is in the stuff.
In natural rice?
I thought it was higher than that.
No.
I thought it was
bad like macaroni.
Oh, macaroni. Heavenly.
Rice
is
a great protein.
It is a protein. But you see, the sages say if we follow soul and nutrition, we couldn't go wrong because our intestinal tract would obey it. We are a product of a solar function. That means the earth revolving around the sun and revolving on its own axis will take off from that principle of electromagnetic reaction.
I only get about 2 or 3 baked potatoes a month now. You mean have to do without them?
No, you can eat things. No, let me show you one thing, what I mean. In solar nutrition, we have dawn, where the cosmic rays are of the slant. And in certain areas, the cosmic rays, pounds per square inch, are more than other areas. That's why certain fruits and vegetables do have higher potencies, especially in the high areas like in the Himalayas and so forth. Those areas where they are grown high, the potency of the electrical charges are stronger. Even for meditation it's stronger. Except in this country, I'll find only in the California regions, which is part of old continent of Mu. See, California is still a part of the old continent of Mu.
Mm-hmm.
So the vibrations are still strong and the cosmic rays beam in better. Now, the tree grows high off the ground, the slant of the rays, because the earth has moved in relation to the sun, so the rays are hitting the tree. So fruits and nuts are the first food the intestinal tract can assimilate easily, because man gets up in relation to these movements. His body moves, but he is pretty dumb and ignorant of it. He don't pay no attention. So he can trick nature for quite a while, till nature takes its toll. So it affects him, and if he gets back in track with it, he'll find fruits and nuts are ideal. Now,
The intestinal tract should not grind the food up too much, because there are certain foods that the intestinal tract cannot dissolve. And only from a colonic and an irrigational process we're going to prove how certain foods don't dissolve no matter we put it in the intestinal tract. It comes out by flushing it out. So if you take the nuts and grind them into a butter form or powder form and mix it into the juice or fruit and consume it. Now, at midday, when your earth is moved in position to the direct lines, vegetables that grow above the surface have the rays penetrating them. Now, that doesn't say you can't eat the cow that lives above if you want to eat it, or the pig or the sheep or the lamb or the chicken. They are walking on the surface. But chickens and birds, they roost in trees. So we see they have something in their favor too. They're a little better than the cow or the pig. Now, those foods you eat at midday, leafy vegetables, and that's the time you can eat your peanut, because peanut is not a nut, it's a legume, and you don't eat it cooked. And you have it raw, powdered form or butter form. And at evening time, when the rays are off, now you can eat those food that grow under the ground that the sunlight never shone on.
That's when you have your potato, huh?
Your potato or your potato soup or your carrot juice, your beet juice, all the onions and all the different things. And the cycle repeats itself. But that doesn't say you can't eat seafood at night. You see? Now, the ancient men had worked these principles out, but they were not going to try and force it down nobody's throat, because here is something you're living with, it's there like a clock. We don't pay no attention, so we mix everything up because we have to eat.
Well, pretty soon a fellow who has something to sell that he wants to sell real well, he's not going to let you get by with your saying when it should be eaten if he has to make a profit on it.
Quite true.
Suddenly you don't need air conditioning. Oh,
You know, interestingly enough, oh gosh, it must have been 20-some years ago when we first got interested in the study of foods, we found this booklet in the United States, where you send off these various places, you know, where you get these various pamphlets on housekeeping, you know, and gardening and so on. And this one was on tree fruits. And we were quite surprised to get something like that from the government that had been prepared, you know, for distribution. But they came out flatly and said that fruits and nuts are man's highest food because it's up closer to the sun, it has a higher rate of vibration, and man at his highest level.
You mean the government printed that?
Yes, you read it too when we lived there on Agnes.
Oh, I read a book called Tree Crops.
What?
I remember the name of it, but then I got that at the library.
No, this was the thing you got from the government.
I remember reading about those bulletins for myself years ago. I remember reading one of those bulletins because I was tracking it down myself. And there's a friend of mine, he's a Canadian French fellow, he's a scientist. He checks the positive and negative charges of food. And that is what is the Orientals call the yin and yang system of eating.
Mm-hmm.
What is called the positive foods and the negative foods.
Well, they combine them.
It's called microbiotics.
Microbiotics.
Yes, microbiotics. And the Japanese have come out with the microbiotic planting. This is the name they've devised.
Mm-hmm.
Where you plant positive foods and negative foods and how to combine them.
That's like putting your onions around your rose bushes.
Yes.
Well, they're very aware people in when it comes to gardening. Because
they've had to learn to get the most out of the littlest bit of ground.
So, if we go back to nature being positive and negative, we find that all these things are with us. But in building a temple, from a physical standpoint, food is there. We have to eat food. No, we don't deny it there.
Well, we don't have to gorge, which some of us do at times.
As I said, the vegetarians look more sick or sicker than the meat eaters. But give them time. Give them time. Their refined natures, their refined consciousness, and the cellular structure will change in time. Now, as Paul said, most people who come to that type of living come when they're already sick. But even it does so much for them to extend the time for them.
Well, it's the usual thing. Their sickness is the thing that's driven them to thinking. It's an adversity that started them to thinking, and then that leads them to a way out is the usual thing.
Yeah.
Is time extended? Do you extend time?
Yes, you extend. That's what I was saying to tonight. See, we were discussing the various extensions of time.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You can extend the time in all your processes of living. You see, you're supposed to live 7 times 21. But we don't live 7 times 21 because society has brain jammed us, which you call hypnosis, there's a term they use. But it's brain jammed. The brainwave is jammed to accept 65 or 70 as the terminal point of existence for men. And the insurance companies are busy worried about how the wives are going to inherit more money than the husbands.
5 years long.
You see, they jam your brain so fast, by the time you get to 45, you're looking at how the dumb grade of your own life is going to drooze out and go in something.
Well, it isn't only insurance company, your employment. You're
it's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous.
Even your children
mark
you off long
about
that.
Oh, yes, they sure do.
But the sages centuries ago had a system which they had worked out and called time span extensions. You have the first 30 years, which is your first breath of extended time. You know, we say you got your second breath or your third breath when you're running. Well, 30 years is the first span. That's why you find. Then the second span is 60. The third span is 90.
You know that corresponds with the Saturn takes 30 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is exactly, it's based.
And Saturn moves time.
Right, it's based on cosmological laws. It's not nothing we invent, you know. You can't invent these things. They are there, they're observed, and they repeat themselves until we learn the lesson. It's going to hit us on the head all the time until we learn the lesson. And Saturn rules law.
Mm-hmm.
The teacher, you know, he's a disciplinarian. Mm-hmm. Saturn is a disciplinarian. Mm-hmm. He's going to discipline you till you learn truth. So we have the truth in us. 30 years, then the full is 120. Now, if we make the 120, and we're fortunate, then we have what is called double time extension.
Hmm.
Not until that time can you get double time extension.
Now what do you mean by double time extension?
It jumps up now.
You mean you could ask for 240?